Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglio along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Steve Geller's joining us also. They were at the Saints practices today. It was indoors. It was hot, but they were indoors. And, man, the business was picking up, so to speak, today. A spirited practice. Bob, I'll throw it to you first. It's Bobby's Notebook, and it's brought to you by Rouse's Markets, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. And, guys, it sort of was one of the better practice sessions that I know a lot of people say that they've seen in years.
Yeah, for the defense.
Yeah.
Kool-Aid McKinstry, I don't know what he drank this morning or before. He
was extra caffeinated.
Yeah, he was fired up. That's good. You want to see that passion and all. Kool-Aid was talking smack. The whole defense, you know, you want them to have that swagger. If you have a defense that has no swagger, you have no defense. You know, you got to play with the utmost confidence. And I would definitely say the defense was winning the majority of the drills. Now, it wasn't all the time. I thought maybe, Mike, when we went inside, it could be a good sign for Tyler Shuck, considering what he did in the OTAs and minicamp. Not so fast. He ended up throwing, you know, a couple of interceptions. Honestly,
his first picks of camp.
His first picks of camp. When you look at it, Stephen, Mike, it's like you call it like you see it. And if you didn't know who none of the quarterbacks were, you can't say, Tyler Shuck or Spencer Rattler, they're head and shoulders above Hayner. No, they're not. If you don't know who nobody is and who's making plays, Hayner's hanging. And he showed a lot of emotion at the end when they went off script, 2 minute. I don't know. When we ran 2 minute offense and we watched this a number of years with like Drew Brees and Sean Payton, I don't think they ever went backwards. You know, you try to go forward to score. I wrote this one thing with Shuck. I mean, it was like a flag, holding penalty, sack, and then a fumble. Oh, like, you know, the fans all excited. Oh, we got a chance to come back. Not so fast.
No, it went all downhill. It started out with the flag on the O-line, like you said, holding. And then a sack.
And then a fumble,
two
pressure.
2 minute drill over.
Yeah, 2 minute drill over. And how it started, Mike and Steve, it was like, you remember, Sean used to do this, a number of teams do this. It was a minute and 40 seconds left. We lose them by four, and we have one timeout.
Need the touchdown.
Yeah, we need a touchdown. Very similar to when we played the Eagles. I think, if I can recall, it was like a minute and 50-some seconds left. You know, and by the way, we did talk to Jordan Howland today. I had to bring it up, though. And, you know, he admitted, he goes, yeah, I messed up, but that's in the past.
Yeah, one stung him.
Yeah, it stung him. He goes, I'm trying to go forward. But, that was a situation. Yes, you keep the Eagles out of the end zone because you're up by four, a minute 50-some seconds left, and we all know the Eagles started out 2-2. They could have very well been like 1-3, and we could have been 3-0. Boy, you never know how that ball's going to bounce. But that was the scenario. They gave all the quarterbacks an opportunity. Can you drive the team down and get a touchdown? And, you know, we had a situation, I think it was Rattler that would have been in there, to throw like a Hail Mary or something. But Coach Moore don't want that, you know, like a jump ball. Somebody got hurt.
You didn't need that. Yeah, got that kind of mess in the end zone.
Yeah. You didn't want that. But a number of players making plays. And without Juwan Johnson being available, Jack Stahl, I mean, he's like.
Let Stahl eat.
Jack Stahl had three catches on him. For like 30 yards. So, Mike, he's a 10-yard guy.
It's like, yep. Hey, I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll take that. Without a doubt, you would take that. And I tell you what, he made one back shoulder catch because they did red zone team. That was impressive from Rattler that I thought, taking advantage of his opportunity with Juwan Johnson not being part of the mix. But when you look at it, Mike, it was like across the board. Things we want to see, especially from a defensive perspective, different players making plays like, DeMario Davis, pass defended. because they're going to drop in coverage. Cam Jordan, pass defendant. Brian Brzee, pass defendant. So you see a number of those that came about. And, you know, it's kind of unusual when you see, like, Cam Jordan, you know, in coverage. Because now, you know, 3-4 instead of 4-3. So when I looked at, you know, the ebb and flow of the team, and I was like, you want it to be 50-50, but no, the defense was winning. But you had good competition. You know, the offense was able to score some touchdowns in the red zone. And I'm going to talk about two individuals that Mike, like all of a sudden you do this in preseason games. Like you have, for instance, I want you to comment on these two guys right here. Okay, Chris Rumpf, the second. He's not a junior. He goes, Chris, I think you put on that right, Rumpf.
Rumpf, yeah.
From Duke, yeah, fifth-year guy, 6'2", 244. Well, Mike, he had two sacks today and a tackle for a loss. You know, if he does that against the Chargers or something, now who you going against? You know, but I can see why he's last. He's very active. And then the rookie. How about Jasheen Davis? The rookie from Wake Forest, 6'3", 270. He had three sacks on the day. And I said, well, who in the hell is blocking him? You know what? You know, it didn't look too good, and the Saints looking at him made to provide depth. Ezrim? Was that the Eastern
Kentucky? Ezrim, right.
Yeah, the Eastern Kentucky guy.
Guys, that's back-to-back days he's struggling.
Yeah. Well, Mike, that's not good. Not good for him.
No, it's not.
You know, when you see that. So, but looking at it was team periods, 7-on-7, red zone team, 2-minute. They got a lot in. Very similar. You know, you see like now they got the pads on. To me, it's like camp has really started and how they're competing and talking smack to one another. And you need that. If you look at Shuck finally, and this is a good thing that happened to him, even though he threw those couple of picks, there was a deep ball that he threw to Olave. And Isaac Yadam and Burgess didn't end up getting called. I didn't hold them. So they had officials out there, so they threw the flag. But you know what? He didn't complete the pass, but he challenged the defense, and at least he got a penalty.
And you saw Bobby right in front of us. Yadam was yapping with the referees nonstop afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't hold him. He goes, yeah, that's what they all say.
He's like, yeah, you did. You were tugging on the jersey.
Well, he's getting used to game day, too.
Exactly.
Well, Mike, if I'd have been an official, I'd say, well, did you see Olave's jersey? It didn't happen by accident. It's a lot of whack got pulled out beyond his shoulder pads. So when I saw that, like, Hayner came in there, like Bub Means plus 12. Bub Means has been steady. Now, can he stay healthy and put some good film out there on preseason game, Chargers, right. Jags, whatever it might be. Groupies, then they had a special teams period. He is still steady. I don't know. His name should be
Steady Eddie.
Steady Eddie or Eddie Grouper. Groupie. I mean, Mike, he's now 19 of 20. And he made actually his longest attempts. You know, they're not trying to just let's make a 60-yarder or like 62. Well, his two attempts, that was the longest attempts in camp. He made a 51 and a 53-yarder. So the only one he had missed was when it was like raining. So he's now 19 of 20. And Mike, talking about taking advantage of opportunity, this is a team period. Rattler was in there. They ran a screenplay to Jack Stoll. Without Juwan John, guess how much they would have gained? 10 yards. So that was a nice tight end screen. You don't see that too much. You see running back and wide receiver screens.
Sean Payton ran a lot of tight end screens.
Right.
He did a lot of that. Now, I've noticed that even with the Eagles, and Steve, you watch them a lot more than, say, I do, but they did a lot of that throughout the years. Not so much last year. But in years past, they would do that little tight end screen quite a bit. Now, again, with the weapons they got, mm-hmm. you can just about run what you want when you got the kind of guys they got. But I remember Sean putting a lot of emphasis on trying to get the football out. If it was Shockey, if it was Jimmy Graham, Ben Watson, you name it, all the tight ends on that tight end screen, because his feeling was, and I think maybe, Bob, you had asked him this one Monday night, his deal was one tackle and he's out into the open field.
Yeah. And Mike, you know, it's all about opportunity. I look at, like, for instance, you know what I was excited about? That he wasn't out of sight, out of mind? Because we paid him big bucks. I said, I think he needs to be at a Pro Bowl level, considering our depth at tight end right now.
Yeah.
You look, Juwan Johnson not being available.
Today.
He was limited, but at least he was out there.
Right.
And, like, in the past, it seems like, he'll be back. We'll see his face in 2 or 3 weeks. And he was actually there, you know, that slight groin, whatever. And so doing work on the sideline, so that was encouraged. You know who always, Mike, who's a steady receiver, is Tipton. That's another one. He's like in nothing, like a simple out route. It might be like plus 12 yards. But when I look at like Mason Tipton, Mike, remember how he was all camp last year?
He was unbelievable.
And then I think he was unbelievable on Irvine for sure. Yeah. And then he gets hurt. And then we never talked about it.
We've been writing down number 15 a whole lot in notes, Bobby.
And all the quarterbacks throw to
right.
And, you know, you might see an explosive play, but you see a lot of, like, good, great route running, like a 12, 15-yard play, like an outright route that's crisp, you know, and stuff. So you see a lot of that. But I was just looking at defense overall, what was winning. But Mike, this was a nice play with Chuck. I think he finally got in a little groove. When he hit in the seam, Molokai, the rookie from UCLA, that was a nice read. That would have been like a plus 20-yard gain. So that's another one taking advantage of a tight end rep. But then right after he had that play, you know, he never wanted that ball being batted up in the air. You know, oh, no, that's like a lollipop for the DBs. Yeah. So Danny Stutzman.
Stutzman knows for the football, man.
That pass defending knocks it up. And then interception by Nephi Sewell. So that's what ended up happening. And then that's when it's kind of started with the names we're not familiar with. Jasheem Davis, Hainer came in there and he got a sack. And that being the rookie from Wake Forest. Mike, I want you to comment when we come back from the break a little bit about him. He's like 6'3", 270. I don't know, maybe it could be who he's going against while he's putting up.
I would think that's partially.
The nice number, so.
You said about Stutzman is this. If there was a knock on him in college, it was that he was – I told this to Steve this morning. He's a bit of a guesser.
Well, he was guessing right a lot of times.
Now, his run defense, his ability to flow real well side to side, he's a good open field tackler. But in coverage – that was a lot of guessing with him. I think it's going here, and it, you know, somebody would have one right over the top with him. So I'm glad to hear that.
He doesn't look like a stiff.
No, no. Never was, but I think that part of guessing.
Yeah, with he get burned.
It's always, come on, you went against corners like that, Bob. They would try to guess the play. Now, sometimes it was a hit, and sometimes it was a miss. But you knew who the guessers were. That played corner. Guys that would try to cheat a little bit.
Yeah, and cheat. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not. Now, if you're more right than wrong, then the coaches live with that. But you know who was a guesser in the passing game? He was a Pro Football Hall of Famer. God rest his soul. Junior Seau. Well, you could burn him in coverage because he wanted to knock the crap out of you. Do play action, he's downhill and kind of loses responsibility what he had in pass coverage. So, no, there's an art to that. You know, I think we got our linebackers been pretty disciplined in pass coverage so far.
We'll be back with more sports talk and more coverage from the Saints camp right here on the Big 870 WWL.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DiTullio along with Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller. Both guys were there at the indoor practice and pads. And guys, I want to ask you, both of you, this question. I know we saw it in the past, not so much under Dennis Allen, but with Coach Payton, he ran a lot of 4-minute drill. In essence, you got the ball with 4 minutes left.
Right.
And okay, you're trying to score, but you're also trying to take the tick-tock off the clock. You don't want to give nobody else any time anymore to come back and get you. And what you were talking about today, a minute 45. So that is what Kellen Moore was doing today with a minute 45 and one timeout.
Well, we still have a lot of camp left, but we're not there yet. We're doing baby steps, Mike.
I got you. No, that's why I'm asking.
You know, we're trying to get a drive together. and not go backwards. Hopefully, do I look at it? Try to look at the glass half full. I said maybe under Coach Daly, our defense is going to come together, and maybe our defense the expectations will be better than they were last year because there's nowhere to go really but up.
You talk about vocal guys. You know, we were saying with Kool-Aid. Man, oh man, I'll tell you what, Chase Young has been really active out there too, hooting and hollering and being in the ref's ears as well.
And that's unusual for him.
Right.
Because he's not been a real vocal guy.
He grabbed the flag from the ref's pocket today even and threw it on the ground.
Mike, he seems like he has the enthusiasm. And, if I can recall, he said, what was his highest sack total? As a rookie, what was it?
Yes, as a rookie.
What did he have? Right on the edge of almost having 10 sacks.
He didn't get 10.
Eight and a half or something like that.
Something to that range.
I think what he had last year, four. He's going to double that.
Five and a half last year.
Five and a half.
He had a ton of pressures.
Right. Yeah.
He just didn't close the deal.
I could see that counting on him, and I know the team is, that not only to keep getting those pressures, but hitting double-digit sacks. So having 10 or 11 sacks, because he's always putting pressure. You know, and a lot of times, do they blow the play dead? Did you get a sack or not? Because you're not taking the quarterback down. So a couple of downs, at times, he's telling Kellen Moore, like, oh, man, that'd have been a sack.
Yeah.
That play doesn't count. You know, so that's good for the defense.
Yeah, right.
Now, not so much good for the offense. But they've kind of traditionally, you know, what they've done is, like, team periods. Like today, like 7-on-7 on the Sean, and then, you know.
We had no sevens today.
Team and then red zone team, and then the two-minute. But, Mike, that four-minute offense, that is important how you close out games. Because I told you that drill which Sean would do in a number of efficient offenses, if you can run that four-minute offense and your opponent's thinking, man, we're right there, one score, we can win this game, but they don't get the ball back. That is so discouraging when you want to stop them, but you can't stop them. And then the team you're trying to stop, let's say like it's 4 minutes and something, and you might be winning by two or three, four, whatever it might be. You know, oh, we got to get the ball back. If we score, we're going to win.
You drain that clock.
But you don't have to score. You just go all the way down and you do like win the game play. When the quarterback gets in the huddle and he just kneels down. Mike, because they have no timeouts or anything.
You know, that's the most discouraging, humbling thing when that happens. That's horrible. You're trying to stop them and they're running the clock out. At the Louisiana line camp, we had a number of the coaches from the Kansas City Chiefs on defense. And, man, they was all bitching about one thing. Man, we hate that four-minute offense drill. And he said, Andy runs it and runs it and runs it. And, okay, with Mahomes – man, he knows what to do with it, and then he don't leave you no clock left. That's the worst part.
Well, what's also the worst part, and I think you see this with Kellen, and they had the confidence, when you're running four-minute offense, now the game's close, not depending on the field position, but when Mike, you're looking at it, okay, not only do I have three downs to get 10 yards, we have four downs.
Four, yep.
And you know, like, oh, shoot, it's like the tush push, here it comes. Oh, and then you got to eat up your timeouts, or we have no timeouts left, and then the game's over. You know, that's discouraging. We're not there yet, you know, but that's when you ultimately know you're clicking is when the defense, they know they have to stop you, but they just can't.
What was interesting today, too, guys, there was a roster move with the Saints. They brought in a third punter. And Kai Kroger, Hunter Decker is the fourth-string quarterback. He has been let go, but just – curious to me that we have
three punters now in camp. Coach Moore, he gave some political answer. I don't know. It's like
we're just trying to find who works best for us.
Yeah, one of those like.
Okay, who's doing the holding for the kicker? Is it the punter, Burnham?
Oh, yeah. Burnup is doing the holding, right?
Yes, he was holding today.
Okay, yeah, that tells me the story.
Well, he was
not good news for Hayball then.
Well, no, it isn't.
He was doing the holding, and a group he's not missing.
Right.
That's even more important.
And then the kicker's like, I hope this guy can punt because I really like him as the holder because you're not going to have a guy on the team. Oh, I made the roster. I'm a holder. You know, you got to do more than one thing. So,
but, Bob, at one time, I know you played. Martin was unbelievable. But at one time, I know John
Fulton had a bunch of holders.
He said, Mike, they had a bunch of holders. It wasn't just the punter. Like he said, it depended on who Martin liked the most hold for him because 4K told me that he held for a while with Martin.
Yeah, he held Brian Hansen. When you play 25 years, you got a lot of different holders, Mike.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is that the holder has no say-so.
Yep.
It's whatever how the kicker wants it. He wants the ball. And so you have to bow down and do what he says. Do you know what's crazy, Mike? I'm playing quarterback my senior year on, you know, high school and all that. I've never held in my life.
That was going to be the next thing I asked you. Did you ever hold?
No, I never held because I was always playing. You know, the starting quarterback don't hold. You know, it's not the extra point. You know, they don't do that. Think about, can you imagine, just look around the NFL. I think even in, maybe not in high school, but I know like college and all that, it's never.
Never the starter.
Like Nussmeier, he's not holding for the LSU kicker, right?
No, it's the punter.
I'm sure Drew Brees probably did everything. But then, when you think about it, you don't see Pat Mahomes holding. You know, that'd be a red flag. Go, Pat Mahomes holding. That's a trick play.
Yeah. What I thought, maybe you did it in high school.
No. I went from free safety to starting quarterback. So
okay.
So my guy,
guys,
I'll throw y'all a
trivia question. We're talking about field goals. You know how many 50-yard or more field goals were made? I did a little research. I got a little time on my hands now. So how many field goals of 50 yards or more were made last year in the NFL? Now remember, 17-game season. How many you think were made?
I think, Mike. Now I'm just guessing here, speculating. That I would think if it's in the conversation, if not the most, it's probably one of the most, because now it's almost like, well, hell yeah, you better make it between 40 and 50 yards. And the way the kickers are now in the profession, like especially 50 to 55, they looking at that, we got to make that. Almost like a 45 yard or something.
234.
234
field goals were made from 50 yards or more. And you know what the percentage on those 50-yard-plus field goals were? Almost 72%. 71.7. Man, it's like it's almost routine now, don't we
right?
see a 55, a 58-yard field goal in, I'm not saying every game, but almost every game.
Well,
somebody lines up for one.
Well, Mike, it's like, oh, you know, I hope he makes it. You're almost like, oh, we're going to make this. Because even it could be for us or against us, like particularly against us. That Korean kicker for the Falcons?
Yeah.
You remember when he's kicking a 50-something yarder, you're like all ticked off. Like, man, we let him get too close. He'll make that. And when you know it, he makes it. Now, he had a little slump last year. But you know I'm talking about those game-winning kicks.
Koo, yeah.
Yeah, Koo. Yeah, Tefu, Koo.
But, man, can he kick. I know he went through a little slump, but, man, I'd want him on my football team. That was Bobby's Notebook, and it was brought to you by Rouse's Market, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. A lot more with Bob's Notebook right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller, both guys that practiced today. And Bobby's Notebook is brought to you by Rouse's Market, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Guys, someone asked me this because we talked about tight end screens that both of you talked about. Wide receiver screens. I do know one thing with Kellen Moore. Having watched how we use CeeDee Lamb, went to Cowboys, and then last year, if it was A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, have we seen a lot of that in practice?
No, not that I can recall, Mike. I don't know.
We've seen a few jet sweeps.
Yeah, like a jet sweep, but no really wide receiver screens. And I don't know if they want – that'd be more Rashid Shaheed play, which would make sense.
Yes.
Not a Chris Olave play.
Or Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, exactly. But, Mike, maybe they're keeping that in their back pocket.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But you would think they would do that. But, no, we have not really. We've seen running back screens.
Yeah.
You know, Steve, not the tight end screen. So,
Steve, you watched the Eagles play a lot, and they did a lot of that with Kellen Moore. If it was to A.J., or if it was Devontae Smith. Now, Devontae's been doing that since he was in high school. He did it at Alabama. He's done it with the Eagles. But they ran a lot of that wide receiver screen with the Eagles last year with Kellen Moore, much more than they've done in years past.
Yeah, that's why you just mentioned with the fact that the skill set of like a Brandon Cooks or with a Rashid Shaheed would be more adept to, you know, fulfill that with the Saints. We haven't seen anything like that yet. I did mention, you know, a few jet sweeps from like Chris Olave, but nothing in the screen game.
But you know what was crazy? I remember I was ticked off and getting on him on the radio when he first got here. We drafted him, Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
Brandon Cooks would run a jet sweep, and if it wasn't wide open, he would just fall down because he's little. But, you know, he'd run that at Oregon
State.
But
you mentioned, look how beefy he is now. No, he's definitely jacked up.
Hey, I got to give Brandon Cooks a lot of credit. He looks like he ain't sitting on the couch. He looks yoked. He looks compact. I mean, he's learning how to be a pro. I looked at him, he looks jacked. He looks like, I don't know, you know when you got more muscles, you just look tougher? That don't mean you're tougher, but at least I think what's great is if you have muscles and you are tough. You know, I think that helps versus like, okay, you're tough, but you're just a soft body. Give me a muscle guy that is tough. I don't know, because law of averages, physics, they probably could be a badass. So, I don't know. Cooks looked, he looked the part, and that whole jet sweep thing, it's like, you know, setting up the blocks. Or can you get that burst? You know, a jet sweep could be like a simple thing because you outflank the defense. Oh, that one taking it to the house, 8 or 9 yards. Wasn't it the first play? Now I'm just having a recollection. The Bengals, the first time Rashid Shaheed touched the ball against the Bengals, remember in the Superdome?
Yep.
Didn't he go for 40-something yards?
Yeah.
What? So, hell yeah, we need to run that play. Now,
but that might be something, as you pointed out, Bobby, they keep it in their hip pocket.
Yeah, yeah. That was, right play at the right time. I was like, whoa, he was hitting it and getting it. And yeah, so they have to utilize that. The same thing, like, we need to run more screens. Well, it depends who's running the screens, because it is a skill set, how you patient. You got to be patient and let the blockers and not just take off. You got to set up and know how to cut and utilize your blockers. Who's the poster child in a Saints uniform?
Probably Pierre Thomas.
Pierre Thomas in NFL history. It's like the coaching clinic. I was a running back. I was patient enough. It was always a positive play. Hey, let the lineman get out in front of him, and then you got to be patient and cut. Oh, I wrote that today. You know who had a nice run that Mike would have been? Only a 6-yard gain, and he showed patience. What was your boy Neal?
Devin Neal.
I was like, man, he's like kind of half-stepping. You know, he's like picking and choosing. Then all of a sudden he hit it. So that would have been a 6-yard gain. And, you know, it looks like, come on, you got to hit it and get it. You got to have that vision and that patience. And I saw that in that one Neal run today where I would end up getting like 6 yards because he let the blocking in front of him take place. But no, that's whether if you're running a screen, whether it's wide receiver, tight end, or running back, no, not just everybody can do that. You have to be patient enough and have to have good ball vision skills as far as how you're cutting off the blocks and letting the blockers help you to be productive.
I think about when the Saints picked him, and I talked about this. Can you name me another player off the Kansas offense? So no. If I'm playing the Jayhawks, guess who I had to stop?
Yeah.
Everything was about, hey, we got to slow down or stop Devin Neal. And, man, that's a lot of pressure on a guy when everything is focused around you. Okay, when you play LSU, okay, you got Caden Durham, you got Chris Hilton, you got the two tight ends, you got Tre'Davious Green, you got Barry and Brown. Now, it's across the board. But with Kansas, name me another guy off that team.
No, on that team, because you look at history, Mike, because you think of Kansas Jayhawks, you think of not the Wildcats in Manhattan, but the Kansas Jayhawks, you think in basketball.
Yes,
you know,
true.
Team, no. But now football, this is unbelievable. When you think about one of the greatest running backs in professional football history, the Kansas Comet, Yeah, what, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame after 7 years. Remember Gale Sayers?
And it tore up his knee.
Yeah.
And then John Riggins.
John Riggins, yes, with the Redskins, the Hogs up front.
Man, my thing is, I'd have loved to have followed John Riggins in Kansas. Boy, I bet he had a good time, because he has a good time anywhere he's at.
Well, I love John Riggins, and to this day, Mike Ditka, God bless him, he's dealing with dementia.
Yeah,
I think
Alzheimer's.
Really yeah, is. Right now. But I tell you what, the new CBA and the old players of the pension, Mike, I'm getting ready to get that August 19. I'm all
How
excited.
How about that, brother?
Hey, John Riggins. John Riggins, and I'm telling you, Mike Ditka went to bat for the old players. And John Riggins' wife is a national, like, recognized labor lawyer. They went before Congress. So I will never say anything bad about Mike Ditka or John Riggins. I can tell you that right now.
That's it for our segment here of Bobby's Notebook, brought to you by Rouse's Markets. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller. When we come back at 5:10 from the RU Sirius Network, covers the LSU Tigers and the second day of practice for LSU. And I say it's fall practice. Some people say it's summer, but it's getting ready for the 2025 season. We'll have Blake on with us. We'll talk some LSU, and then we'll come back to Bobby's Notebook, talking about some of the things that happened today during the Saints practice sessions. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line from the RU Sirius Network covering the LSU Tigers, Blake Ruffino. Blake, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, Mike.
I was talking to Charlie about this off the air. My thing is, on the edges along the offensive line, you know, you kind of know what you got there. I think you saw a little bit of it in the Texas Bowl game against Baylor, where I thought Baylor tried to do a lot of different things to kind of confuse that front, and didn't quite work. And I thought Tyree Adams and Weston Davis did a good job. My concern is really right up the middle because of the fact, you know, if they healthy, Moore's going to start at center. Okay, that's a given. DJ is going to go back to the guard position where he belongs, and Mbenga, and we'll see if that works out at the guard position. But looking at it, other than Bo Bordelon, tell me anybody else that's got any kind of playing time along that offensive line. We know about injuries, and about that position takes a lot of them. So you have six guys. Who would be the seventh and eighth? And is it an 18-year-old freshman or redshirt freshman that's going to come in here to play?
Yeah, Mike, I think it's Carius Kern. You know, look, we've been out there for 2 days, and I just got to tell you, even right now, look, again, Mike, you've been out there a lot, so you understand what I'm trying to say here. The interior has not been great first 2 days. And they have Carius Kern at left tackle. Mike, I got to be real. I'm moving him inside now, and I'm giving him a look. I understand Mbenga. I understand Chester, which, by the way, Mike, just a side note, I think looks a lot better at guard than at any point at center a year ago. But I'm giving Carius Kern a run here. I just think the strength, I understand the experience. But, Mike, if you got tools and you can play and you're more talented the guy ahead of you, he's got to get a look. Now, what does Josh Thompson do? You know, what happens on Saturday when we go and get those pads on and they're out here hitting? I don't know. But to your overall point, I think it's a great question that we had a lot of debate about last night. God bless the Almighty if somebody goes down, because, Mike, let me read off what happened in team period with the second unit. Gooden sack, Patrick Payton sack, Patrick Payton sack, Gabe Rutherford sack. They ran four plays.
Damn.
So, now Patrick Payton probably shouldn't be going up against the second team, right? I don't think that that's going to happen. But Michael Van Buren had no time. And I think that that is to a point where I'm with you. I don't know about the depth or quality of depth that's experienced enough to get ready to go. They got to find somebody, and they got to find somebody now. So I'm sorry for not really answering your question, but Mike, they got to get Kerryus Kern moving, and they got to get him moving quick.
Well, Blake, now that you mentioned that, I was like thinking, okay, very similar to the Saints. Are we winning or losing in the trenches? It could be offense and defensive line. You know how you slow down the pass rush? When you run right at them. Because a lot of times, right. Outstanding pass rushers, they want to like rush the passer, then on the way to the quarterback, play the run. But at the point of attack, if you can go right at them. But so the question I have for you, and this really applies, I guess, to both sides of the ball. I'm looking at an offense last year, LSU ranked last in the SEC in rushing, 116 mm-hmm. yards per game. And it was even ineffective in short yardage situations. That puts a lot of pressure on Nussmeier. And then they had the experienced offensive line. So at times you could say, well, maybe they abandoned the run too quickly. And then the defensive side of the ball wasn't much better. Well, they were 12th in the league, giving up 140 yards rushing allowed per game. So, and then, you know, obviously containing mobile quarterbacks. We played Alabama. We put them in the Hall of Fame. But now, you know, Jalen Mirrell. So when I look at all that, you know, it's all fine and dandy. You have all, well, look at all these skilled people and all that. But something as simple as, like, are you winning and losing in the trenches? I don't care if you're trying to stop the run or run the ball. That to me, more than anything, that's a concern. And it's going to start with Clemson. You can't get discouraged. I think we can upset Clemson. But looking at that, that's totally unacceptable that you last in the SEC rushing the football when you 12th in the SEC stopping the run. That can't happen going forward.
Yeah, you know, Bobby, the thing that I brought up to your point, remember 2023 when the secondary was as god-awful as it was, there was a lot in the offseason made of that, and rightfully so, right?
Right.
But then going into this season, what if I told you in 2023 your secondary ranked in the country 108th, and in rushing last year you were 108th from a countrywide perspective? Yeah, it's the same deal. Their inability to run the football, Brian Kelly at the end of the year having to get involved in play calling from a run game standpoint, I don't know how they walk that back. Personally, I just don't. But even, Bobby, the first 2 days. I mean, look, Bernard Gooden got the start today with the first team in reference to the three tackles for a loss in the run game that he had yesterday. I mean, look, I'm not trying to call anybody out, but that interior offensive line got whooped.
Right.
And so, again, you don't have pads on, and I know what I'm saying is, you know, all Blake is day one, I get it. Bernard Gooden's 260 pounds. And I understand what we're saying. They're going to have to find something, Bobby, in my opinion, in that interior. Again, for me, I think you do Kerryus Kern a very big disservice by leaving him at left tackle. But, you know, I don't know what they do there. Again, I guess let's see what happens on Saturday when pads come on. But, Bobby, another thing to your point, today and yesterday, more yesterday than anything, I think there was a massive focus of trying to just get the running back the ball out of the backfield from a pass game standpoint, quick pass, quick throws.
Right.
And the Houston transfer safety, A.J. Halsey, was having none of it and got to throw him out there. Perkins was having none of it. I mean, they were all over. And so, Bobby, the question that I'm starting to have right now for me was what they've done in the interior of the defensive line at the current moment with Don McKinley, who was pretty disruptive. I know me and Mike have talked about him a lot. That front seven been moving now, baby. I mean, like, they've been – I mean, look, 2022 was probably the best defense Brian Kelly has had here. I just think it's been more competitive up front defensively. The edge has set the tone, and that is the bottom line. They have dominated from day one of spring. They've dominated yesterday. They dominated today. So I don't know what they're going to figure out along this offensive line, offensively, what they're going to try to do. But they're not, at the current moment, They have not figured that part out. Now, they try to get the ball to the backs out of the backfield, but again, it just it hadn't been flowing that way. In Garrett's defense, I'll just say this. There were some throws yesterday that I'm like, goodness gracious, that's better than, you know, right decisions, ready to go. So, it had through 2 days, I wish I could come out here and say it was a lot better, but right now it has not been.
Now, Blake, you know, obviously sometimes you want it to be 50-50. You don't want the offense to dominate or the defense to dominate because you're going against one another. But when you look at defensive coordinator right now with Blake Baker, and you look at Harold Perkins and now Whit Weeks and those chess pieces that he has there, when you look at Perkins, is it kind of like a star hybrid linebacker safety position? How is he being utilized there?
Yeah, Bobby, I mean, he's in that star role, whatever you want to call it. Is it a big safety in the box sort of deal, whatever you want to call it, an over-glorified 4-3?
Right.
Whatever you want to call it. They sent him all day yesterday. I mean, he was coming. He was coming after 13. He made some disruptive plays in the backfield and some run game stuff. He made some disruptive plays getting after Garrett, which Garrett had to dump it off quickly. They send him a lot. And what I think is a little bit interesting about this front seven, based off of what Blake Baker so far during the spring and through the 2 days in camp, they have rotated that front seven more than any unit that I've ever been a part of or watching practice or anything like that. For an example, first down base, they're doing something completely different along the defensive line than they're doing on second down, third down. And even in yesterday's situation, the fourth down, where they're going a three-man front, but they have Patrick Payton on the outside along with Harold Perkins. So just a lot of different things that they've been doing, and Jamari Butler was in the inside. A lot of different things, but from Perkins' perspective, he's been in that star role coming downhill a lot, trying to just get in the backfield. And then A.J. Halsey, the safety from Houston, also being in the box a lot, and they've been going man-to-man. And they're just trying to get after Garrett as much as they can right now from what we've seen. But, Bobby, the first unit yesterday, as an example, there were four different defensive line combinations in 25 plays. So, I mean, just based off of personnel and what they've called and what they're doing, it depends on who's there. Tyburn's been in there. Relaford, who's had a big camp so far, had a sack again today. It's just been a big deal in how they're rotating them in and out, and it's been a lot of them.
You know, Blake, so you look, they're benefiting. It seems like now you got to play the games, but the transfer portal, they're going to have opportunities. And, you know, a lot of different faces, but it's all about opportunities, keeping guys fresh. So that's definitely encouraging with the defense. And then you even look at the back end, because that's one thing more than anything. You know, fans will come up to me, and I don't know, maybe it's a pride thing, you know, Tiger Stadium, whatever. We should never have a sorry defense. We might not have enough imagination offensively, but I like it when it's like, you know, sustained drive. How about we, you know, getting up on them when they can't make three or four first downs in a row or something? You know, to me, that kind of sets the tone. And it's nice when you score touchdowns and explode, the crowd goes wild. But there's nothing like it when you sack in the quarterback, creating turnovers. That's when I think the crowd really goes mad. And that's when we need to get back defensively, to me, in Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, and just being consistent, right? I mean, look, third down for under Brian Kelly has been pretty abysmal. Now, I got a little bit better last year under Blake Baker. I know they've talked a lot about quote-unquote, getting him the tools. But, Bobby, again, I mean, you're talking about Jacoby and Guillory being your third rotation of that interior defensive tackle room. They've run out Bernard Gooden. Ahmad Bro has been in there. They've moved Jamari Butler in these pass-down situations, what he did at Nebraska. Look, I think he had, what, five sacks last year? Four came at that three technique, inside, outside that shoulder of the guard. So, again, it's just so many mix and matching. They're running in and out of there. Again, it's only 2 days, right? And I understand that. But if you're doing that in 2 days, what are you trying to accomplish, right? Like, are you just trying to keep guys fresh? That's one thing. But at the current moment, it seems like, look, we feel like we have a lot of people in the interior from a depth perspective that we can give a lot of reps to. and we have a lot of guys on the exterior that can get after it, and we're going to send Perk right after you. Come and get us. We're going to go with Mansoor Delane, and we're going to go with Stance, and we're going to go man up, and we're going to make you get the football out and tackle in space. That has been really where they've been trying to attack. And I don't know if, for me, and seeing it, why would you do that through spring? Why would you do that through the first 2 days of camp if that's not something that you're not trying to implement throughout
right.
the season?
Yeah, I agree.
We have on with us Blake Ruffino from Are You Serious Network. Blake, two questions for you. One, you know how I feel about Juwan Johnson. My thing is, I did that experiment, and sometimes it works. I saw Corey Webster do it. Yeah, I watched him at St. James. He was a terrific quarterback. They moved him to wide receiver. Then he became a really all-SEC cornerback in the NFL. But I always told you, and I really felt this way, Johnson should be playing on offense somewhere. Now, I don't know if they're going to build a package with him at the quarterback position that maybe, and I want to say similar to Taysom Hill, but you can build those packages around a player that you can use, especially goal line, short yardage situation. The other one, I think you know who probably told me this, Ahmad Bro, and his comment was, Dominic McKinley is dominant in these drills, I've been told. But he said, watch Ahmad Bro. And the first time I met Ahmad, I don't think his second number was a 3. He was like 225 pounds. And he tells me, oh, they got me here to play defensive tackle. I took a good look at him. I said, dude, I remember when I weighed 225. That's the way you play defensive tackle here now. He's different today. But your thoughts on the progress of Ahmad Bro and how they'll use Juwan Johnson this year, because they've moved him now from the secondary and now quarterback, whatever hybrid player that he's going to be.
You know, Mike, it's to attack the Juwan Johnson thing quickly. Funny that a quarterback has a contact jersey on if he's a quarterback. That's all I'm saying, because he does. But he took handoffs yesterday, and I don't know if we've been in here long enough to see certain situations at the goal line for him yet. We haven't gotten that far. I would not be surprised at all. Mike, they're handing him off the football yesterday. I mean, he went through quarterback drills. He went through some running back drills. He's been through ball-carrying drills. He was in them today. When quarterbacks were warming up, he was not with the quarterbacks. He was with the running backs in ball security. So I think that for what their vision may be for him, tells you all you need to know. He was the only quarterback, quote-unquote, yesterday that went that defenders were able to hit. Now, Mike, I'm just going to tell you now, he ain't sitting in that pocket long. So I would just say that I want to see a little bit more, you know, right before we get there. I think they're going to utilize him. What they do, how they do it, I don't know yet. In reference to Ahmad Bro, now wearing 16 instead of 93, Mike, he was talking about last offseason having to go to Whataburger 3 times a day. I look at Whataburger and Game Burger. You know, what are we talking about? Mikey's looked good. I mean, again, some of the disruption on third down when we were talking about the different defensive lines just a second ago. Mikey's coming in on third down. They're using 2-3 techniques and those edge guys, and he's coming off. Again, I think more of the bigger guys, like some of the freshmen that have kind of rotated in here, like Zion in the interior on first down, Shadir Mitchell being there on first down. Then in certain situations, bringing in guys like Ahmad Bro and then Bernard Gooden on these pass down situations. Again, for any situation, the current way that I feel is what they've been doing, hey, we got two guys that we feel like are the best pass rushers in the interior. If it's third and six, third and seven, or plus, we're going to get them out there. Mike, they're rotating them out there like a baker with some rolls in here now. They're rotating them out of there. So he's looked really good. He looks a lot stronger, Mike, if I'm being real. Just a lot built a lot better and looks a lot stronger. And he's been in that rotation of defensive tackles. But, Mike, don't be surprised. You're going to hear about him on third down a lot because that's where they've been putting him so far.
Yeah, he can rush the quarterback really well. Blake, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate time and insights. And, man, I know it's just day 2, but so much excitement for LSU football and game 1.
Well, and Blake and Mike, we think of game one is the playoffs before the playoffs.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever looked forward to, like, Ohio State, Texas, LSU, Clemson? It doesn't get any better than that.
People trying to build up this Alabama, Florida State. Alabama's going to wipe the floor with Florida.
No, I look at LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, Texas. Don't get any better than that.
I agree with you. Blake, thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Thank y'all for having me.
All righty. We'll be back with more sports talk here in Bobby's Notebook right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're going back to Bobby's Notebook, which is brought to you by Rouse's Markets, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Bob, one of the questions I want to ask you is about red zone play, because that is so important in the NFL, and that's all about practice. And
right.
The second part of that is making sure your best playmakers touch the ball in the red zone. So we know it's about Kamara. And it's going to be about Chris Olave. Those guys in the red zone, tell us about how the red zone has broken down for you.
Well, you got to count Rashid too, Mike, I think.
Yeah,
Rashid. But, you know, it's like, I don't know, you want it really to be 50-50. Because you don't want your red zone defense to suck.
No.
I mean, you know, it's like, oh, can we bend but don't break? Then you force in field goals instead of giving up touchdowns. And obviously when you get down there, we got to put it in the end zone. We can't settle for field goals. So, yeah, that's why it's a give and take. And it was like, I think the offense got a little better on the back end compared to the beginning of the red zone. But a number of defensive players making plays. There was a rollout with Rattler, and nobody was open. He took off and was going to run not so fast. Nathan Shepard, that would have been 0 yards. Then you had Cam Jordan on coverage. You had Alante Taylor coming on a blitz. Brian Brzee pass defended. So all the players you need to contribute was getting it done. I've been watching Kelvin Banks Jr. Mike, the finesse part of it, good pass protection.
Yeah.
He definitely.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, he looks the part. I don't know about being no run mauler, but as far as, you know, I'd be surprised if he doesn't excel from the get-go as a pass protector. Okay, with that being said, you want to be able to do everything. You want run block or pass block. Now, when you look at the continuation of the red zone, this one, Chris Rump stood up against Kendre Miller, who Kendre Miller has to catch the coach's attention in preseason games. It was a tackle for loss. The good play for Chris Rump, you know, the fifth-year guy out of Duke. And, Mike, what's interesting. And, you know, Steve Gell and I, we were just talking about that. You look at a guy like Chris Rump. He's drafted in the fourth round, and this is going in his fifth year. But guess why he's here? He was drafted by the Chargers. Who was coaching the Chargers? Coach Staley.
Yep.
So, Mike, if he continues to make plays, you know, the trust factor. I mean, he ended up having a tackle for a loss and two sacks. Now, who is he going against? You know, and it'd be interesting to see what happens in the preseason with him. Now, with Tyler Shuck, you know, I had mentioned earlier when the interception, you know, that he had, the batted ball when Stutzman passed defending Nephi Sewell, ended up getting it. But at least he's being more aggressive, not just holding the ball and trying to make plays. I think he kind of stumbled. Jeff. And we were standing by each other. Look, he stumbled. I don't know if he got, you know, the turf snake, whatever, got his cleats. But he was kind of falling back, stumbling. And he threw it, didn't really have much of the ball. Jordan Howland came up with an interception on the back of the end zone. You never want to throw a red zone pick. That is like, man, so close, but so far. So that was a Shuck's second interception of the day. And that was by Jordan Howland. Now, and we continued, though. He didn't pout. He continued the fight. Shuck to Kevin Austin Jr. This might have been his the best throw, nice throw, a plus 16-yard gain. You know, you put the ball to 20, so then you're in scoring range, and he hit Kevin Austin Jr., nice throw for 16 yards. Then all of a sudden, but then it's up and down, then he gets sacked by Jasheen Davis. And that's never good. I think that was a the tackle from Eastern Kentucky, Ezra. I don't know about him.
Yeah,
he's
regular then, getting beat.
But then Mikey. But then he bounces back. Shuck to Mason Tifton, 13-yard touchdown. Beat again a guy the Saints are counting on defensively, Quincy Raleigh, kind of on a skinny post. Quincy Raleigh, he made plays in the ball, got a couple of interceptions so far in camp. But Mason Tipton got the best of him. I'm just telling you, Quincy Raleigh's playing, teams are picking on him. They always pick on the rookie. Now, the last red zone pair, looking at Rattler in there, he beats Rashia. He throws it to a touchdown, 15-yard touchdown. Boy, this is what I like about this play, because a lot of things were happening. Nice pressure by Chase Young, but Rattler hung in there, hit Rashid for a 15-yard touchdown, beat Alante Taylor. Not so good for the defense, because we need Alante Taylor to, he's not going to be 100%, but Rashid caught a 15-yard touchdown, Alante Taylor, nice pass by Rattler, even though a lot of pressure by Chase Young. So that's a lot of household names right there that occurred and ended up getting an offensive touchdown. So when it slam dunk, the defense won, but they won the majority of time. And that was really the last red zone period before we got into situational football with 2 minutes, with like a minute and 40 left, losing by 4 and 1 timeout. And as the show goes on, we'll break down the back end of that. But that was kind of the red zone. It was kind of give and take, the offense and the defense. But again, overall, the one thing I could say, at least Shuck didn't play scared today. He threw a couple of picks, but he was being more aggressive. And the first pass he threw downfield, he got an interference call in his favor. But you got to spin it. You got to be like, I'm not saying so reckless that I'm just throwing it to be throwing it. But you can't be timid. If you're timid, then you'll never make plays.
Hey, you being a rookie. That's exactly right. What you described is what rookie quarterbacks go through. Here's the crazy part about Chris Rumpf, and you brought it up. He's a little bit of a hybrid player because he's not a big defensive end. He's really built more like a stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker.
And Mike, I love this text right here because I can remember this today. This still gives me nightmares. Bobby knows all about red zone picks. Saints versus Falcons, 1991 playoffs. We moved down the field. And then all of a sudden, I'm throwing to Wesley Carroll, and he's cutting across. Mike, to this day, I would make the same throw. And you know how you got to run flat and don't give ground? Well, guess who was guarding him? I said, I can burn Deion. I'm going to burn Deion. Deion tugged at his jersey. I go, what? He intercepted it. I thought I had a touchdown. How did he do that? And he got away with that? Those are the kind of plays, like, Mike, I thought, man, I was feeling sharp. I'm right on. I got a damn touchdown. No, you don't. Deion just picked you off.
He was one of one in this world.
I'm like, this is unbelievable. So that's why red zone, though, I know all about throwing red zone picks or red zone touchdowns. Believe you me, I never forget when I came back in 1991, and the fans are going to cheer me and they're going to boo me. When I hit Floyd Turner, the back of the end zone, to beat the Seattle Seahawks, the very first game. I remember just saying, oh, thank you, Jesus. Thank you for helping me in that divine intervention. I needed that touchdown so bad to win that game. So the red zone is that important. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know, but I know how important it is.
We'll be back with our triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. It's our triple option feature, myself along with Steve Geller, the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. I'll do this real quick. Bobby brought up Chris Rumpf the second and his playmaking skills. And again, I think he's a little bit of a hybrid player. You can see why I think he would fit better in a 3-4 defense as a stand-up guy. But, man, I go back. I scouted his dad.
Whoa.
Who was a linebacker at South Carolina. Now, he bounced around the NFL, never really made it anywhere. But guess where he's coaching today?
His dad, you mean? Is that Mike?
his dad, and we'll see him August 30th.
With Clemson?
He's the defensive line coach for Clemson.
Wow. Well, you know, what goes around comes around. It's about a small world and how everything connects. Mike, that's crazy.
And he's got two potential first-round pick defensive linemen that he's grooming in. But you talk about a guy who goes to South Carolina, but now he's the defensive line coach for Clemson.
Well, yeah, the whole Carolinas, you know, he probably stayed in that region. You know, Carolina Panthers, that's South Carolina's team, even though it's in Charlotte. You look, North Carolina, South Carolina, Duke, North Carolina, you know, Clemson, that's all that same area. So, yeah, Mike, that stands to reason. Boy, look at that connection when you connect the dots. That's pretty unique.
Steve?
Guys, I'm going to talk about NOLA Gold Rugby. The future of rugby in New Orleans is in big trouble. NOLA Gold informed the Major League Rugby League that they're not going to field the team in 2026. On their website right now, you can go to it. It says, NOLA Gold has informed the league we do not intend to participate in the 2026 season. Discussions are ongoing with the league regarding future opportunities and potential pathways forward. They're an original member of Major League Rugby. Local attorney Tim Falcon led the city's entry.
Falcone.
Yep. Led this league 2018 as one of seven teams. They finally reached the postseason for the first time in 2024, lost in the opening round to Chicago. Then this past season, they finished 4-12, which was fifth in the Eastern Conference standings. The Gold withdrawal from this season leaves Major League Rugby now with nine teams. Also today, guys, the San Diego Legion and the Football Club from Los Angeles announced that they're merging for next season as the California Legion.
I think right by the Saints facility. Look, we got rid of our Triple A baseball team, right? To let them take over the field. And it was a nice venue. I've been to a number of games for the NOLA Gold. I don't know. I thought we'd embrace that more. Now, sometimes you want to embrace something, but if you don't know the rules, you know, like, what the hell? You can understand they tackling and it's tough and all that. But, you know.
What can they do with the Shrine this year now?
Yeah, because we have no baseball.
Nothing.
The high school football. They have those deals where that's they have true. Big games like Rummel. Curtis and all playing out there. So yeah, it can still be utilized. You got to use some imagination to utilize it. But
baseball back.
Yeah, then I don't know. I kind of like rugby. I mean, if I want to see minor league baseball, I'll go see the Biloxi Shuckers. this is we go out there Double A baseball thing, and that's the Brewers Double A team.
Yes, it is.
And so they support. So I don't know. I'd rather. I mean, some people might differ from me.
Maybe get a UFL team.
No, that stadium's not big enough. I mean, maybe it is. No, but I would say more that than baseball because we have our major league team. We have the LSU Tigers, and hopefully Tulane. And you know, we love college baseball. That's like our major league programs. So I hope they can work it out that rugby will eventually.
Maybe
work.
Folks will get their wish. They put an ice hockey rink in there.
Yeah, but that ice would melt so fast. Ain't nobody be skating. They'd be swimming instead of skating. But you know what? Mike and Steve and Charlie, I'm going to stay with on the Olympic route. You know, I went with the Olympic route yesterday with Bruce and Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, you caused a stir with that.
Did I? Why? the world's greatest athlete now is a woman? I mean, how can that be?
Our text line lit up, Cajun Cannon.
Everybody's so sensitive. What's up with that? I'm just speaking the truth. I mean, it's like, a world record holder.
What's today's Olympic story?
Yeah, today's Olympic story, July 31st. On July 31st, 2012, at the Summer Olympics in London, swimmer Michael Phelps won his 19th Olympic medal. Becoming the most decorated Olympian of all time, he finished his career with 28 total Olympic medals, 23 of them gold. You know, if you like competing in the Olympics, I'm just trying to win one damn medal. Or I win one gold medal, I think, man, look, all the hard work I put in, and look what I accomplished. That, to me, blew my mind. Michael Phelps. He likes to smoke a little ganja a little bit, whatever, he's trying to get away, relax, and, you know, he's modern because he's dealing with mental health issues and all that, but a good thing. But it just goes to show you how he's a unique athlete. Look, he fit 28 total Olympic medals, 21 of them gold. Like I said, some people say, man, I'm a gold medal winner. How about I won 23 of those damn gold medals.
That's unreal.
Michael Phelps, ain't nobody can hold his jock. I don't think you have a jock when you swim.
You don't have to worry about that.
He can't hold his trunks.
Swimming trunks. I mean, that right there, Michael Phelps, somebody the best of the best. It didn't get any better than that in the Olympics.
We grew up, it was Mark Spitz.
Yeah.
And look at what Phelps did after.
No, it's a totally different level. It's like great and greater.
Exactly. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglio along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller. In the 6 o'clock hour, Jeff Nowak will join us, also covering Saints practices. And at 7 o'clock right here on the Big 870, it's exhibition football, but it's football as the Lions play the Chargers. You can hear it right here on the Big 870 WWL. More sports talk right after this news break.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on into the second half of Sports Talk. July the 31st, the final day of July, and then we're going to be hitting August 1st, and that means football. And we have action tonight. Hall of Fame game, Detroit Lions versus LA Chargers, coming up 7 p.m. right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app.
Well, you know, who's playing? You know, it's like it's an extra preseason game. That's one reason why the Chargers didn't want to practice against us, because they
probably
went a week earlier to training camp, and they have an extra game. So if you're going to be objective, like, oh, man, you know, you get all ticked off. I can't believe Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers don't want to practice against it. How is that going to – if I'm running a team, how is that going to benefit us? So Harbaugh looked at us, okay, we here a week earlier, we have the Hall of Fame game. So, no, I'm worried about my team. I'm not worried about the Saints. So, but if they didn't have the Hall of Fame game, I'd say that's a bunch of BS that Harbaugh didn't practice against the Saints. Now, if we're going to continue to go to Irvine in the future – I don't know. I look at AFC opponents in that region. I don't know. Practice against the Raiders. Right there in the proximity to Las Vegas. Whatever. I wouldn't necessarily go the NFC route, you know, because the Rams or 49ers or even the Cardinals. But, you know, the Raiders maybe work something out.
You mentioned yesterday, too, that, you know, the connection with Houston. That seems just logical.
Yeah, from a local perspective, whether you're going to Houston. But it's hard to have two practices going on at the same time if you're dealing with the heat index.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff. Now, if you had two indoor facilities, you know, you get a lot accomplished. But nobody's going to have that. That's like that's like the Saudis or something. It's like in Dubai or something. We're just going to build something, be building something because we have so much damn money. But it might eventually come to that. But from a fan's perspective, you have the I-10 connection, the corridor. Houston Texans, New Orleans Saints, AFC, NFC. I don't know. It just makes sense that we should practice against them. But looking at the game tonight, you know what I'm intrigued with? Man, I'm having a brain fart right now. Charlie, help me out. The quarterback, considering where he was drafted from, North Dakota State, very similar to the Colts quarterback who hasn't played a lot of football, starting football. Is it Trey Lance? I'm thinking of...
Right, he's okay. With the Chargers now, if you didn't know.
Yes, and Harbaugh said, no, he's playing. So you're not seeing Justin Herbert. So Trey Lance, Charlie, what was he drafted about a 49ers before he went to Dallas? Number three overall, I think, in the first round. You know, talk about you got a new one or get off the pot. No, I mean, don't give up on him. Wait, maybe Harbaugh. No, okay, Harbaugh, maybe he could be a significant backup, maybe overdrafted.
Sure,
but
maybe.
49ers, Dallas, and now he's with the Chargers. And so Harbaugh thinks maybe he can work a little magic with Trey Lance. So if you want to watch the game, you know, it's like, okay, I'm chomping at the bit for football. But I don't know if I really – who's playing? I'd want to be there at the kickoff. You know, watch that first half or that first quarter. because you might see players that you will see on Sunday playing. And I'm kind of intrigued to see what Trey Lance would do with the Chargers, because I think they're going to give him every opportunity to try and make him work out.
And then after that, a lot of guys definitely fighting for a job on that roster or somewhere else.
Yeah, I never forget, we played against the Chargers. Now I was in Atlanta in the Hall of Fame game. I was like a player coach. June said, oh, you ain't got to play. So we put Perry Klein in. He went to Cal Berkeley, then he went to CW Post. I forgot what round we drafted him. And I hung out with Perry in Pacific Palisades when they had the fires. No, he's from a wealthy family from Malibu, and then his house was burned to the ground. So we had, you know, they had martial law and all that, National Guard. You can even go. So I got like a firsthand view of what happened in the Pacific Palisades. It looked like a bomb went off. This is where my house was, overlooking the ocean and all that. No, it was so devastating. But the reason why I bring that up, because we were playing the Hall of Fame game. It was the Chargers versus the Falcons. And Perry Klein scrambles and he runs and he scores a touchdown. And he was a gymnast growing up. So in the end zone, he did a backflip. He's just standing up. Can you imagine like a quarterback today score a touchdown and just do a flip in the end zone?
Maybe Lamar.
No, you might see like a receiver or Marisol, but you don't see any quarterback doing that. So, yeah, I was high-fiving and June said, look at Perry. He's like, so he went and he did a backflip in the end zone in the Hall of Fame game.
After our first break, we're going to get into our one-on-one interview we did today with Jordan Howden, Saints safety. First up, though, we're going to dip into the WWL Sound Bank brought to you by First American Bank. Here's some cuts from head coach Kellen Moore after today's practice. Here was his opening statement about today, including some transactions.
Knock out a couple things here really quick. A couple roster adjustments here as we go. We had Kai Kroger, punter from South Carolina, and then we let go of Hunter Deckers, quarterback. Obviously, you know, just making that move there as we go, and we'll see how everything progresses moving forward. The injury things we had talked about, Juwan Trayton and John, you know, Juwan was limited in practice. The other two did not participate in practice. Obviously, it'll be a little thing. It'll take a few days for those guys to get back into it, but they'll be fine, nothing long term. And other than that, it was an awesome practice. Really, really good practice. We were inside. It was kind of the second day in pads, so the energy and the effort was spectacular. It was a lot of fun, and so we had a great day, and it was really, really good. I think one other thing I want to shout out is LSU Tulane. I know they started yesterday, so fired up for all the college teams in our state to get going in college football. We always love to support those guys, and it'll be a fun journey for them.
Coach Kellen Moore giving some love there to the local squads. We talked a lot about with Bobby's training camp notebook about the two-minute drill today. Coach Moore was asked about the end of practice when Jay Kaner hit that last touchdown to seal it for the offense.
I think it's really good for all of our guys just to get in these call-it situations where you kind of get off the scripts. Scripts can be a little bit of you know, preparation. There's preparation associated with scripts, and so force these guys just to go play, react to a bunch of different situations that are going to come up, and ultimately that's how games are played, and so we'll start implementing that throughout these practices moving forward.
One of the things that has been really noticeable, because it's we just haven't seen it at all during Sean Payton or Dennis Allen's tenure, that there's been refs at practice every single day at training camp. Coach Moore on why he's decided to do that.
I just think it's good for everyone. You know, everyone, that there's an accountability associated when officials are out there. You know, there's results associated with it. And so all of our guys get to feel the ramifications. Sometimes they love to question, you know, calls out there, but that's part of it. It's part of how you got to respond in different situations. That's how games are played. And so I think it's really good training for all of us.
The roster move today that Coach talked about, they brought in another punter in Kai Kroger, releasing quarterback Hunter Deckers. But now there's three punters on this Saints roster. Coach Kellen Moore on why that is a factor.
We just really liked what Kai presented the other day. He came in for a workout. He did an excellent job, and so we felt like he'd be a great addition to the competition. And, you know, these rosters are always moving. They're always little pieces and adjustments. We got enough flexibility within our roster to handle it for the time, and so we'll see how it all progresses.
So a number of sacks, number of takeaways today from the defense. Coach Moore's thoughts on what they derided.
Yeah, they did an excellent job. I think, you know, the front came alive, the energy, the juice, love the excitement on that sideline, responded really, really well. And, you know, those guys played excellent in those two-minute situations. Certainly, you saw a lot of that. You know, we talk a lot about those two-minute situations. You get a sack, that stalls those situations. That can end those drives really, really quickly. And so it just takes one. You just got to keep rushing. When you get it, big opportunities are going to present themselves.
Coach Moore earlier just talked about that two-minute drill. I mentioned Jake Haener leading that touchdown drive at the end to seal it for the offense. Coach Moore sounds off about it.
Yeah, Jake did a nice job. You know, we got in a couple of goofy situations, some really long yardage situations, and he was able to convert and get us back in track. There may have been potential sack there, according to Chase. We'll see. But we kept the drive going, and, you know, it was really good work, I think, for both sides of the football. Anytime, we'll just continue to try and steal as many two-minute drills as we can because so many games come down to those situations.
Cannon, I know you've been pretty impressed with what Jake Haener's doing. He just doesn't look like a guy that's just there going through the motions, someone that's definitely in this QB competition.
He made a pass today. I don't know, it's better to be lucky than good, but it didn't look luck because he was very confident. That freaking throw was unbelievable. One of the greatest throws in NFL history. A practice or a game, it was like 40 yards. You want to talk about a small window. I was like, whoa. And then Pettis, he threw it to Pettis, and at the last second he turns his head, and it's right there, and he's focused, and he caught the ball. The coverage couldn't be any better. You're talking about drop it through the tar. Can you imagine you had the county fair or the church fair, the parish fair, and, you know, you throw it through a tar.
Sure.
Can you imagine that small tar is like basically like 40 yards away, and you're able to hit it? No, it was like almost like a miracle. But Haener did it with a lot of confidence. I'm telling you, that pass was unbelievable. I know it's practice. That doesn't count. It's not a game. No, I'm telling you, the wow factor, I mean, if Drew Brees would make this pass, you'd say, well, that's why he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Yeah. That was a Pro Football Hall of Fame pass on that 40-yard to Pettis. And it sustained the drive. You know, when they started out a minute, 40 seconds, losing about four, a timeout to go down the field and to have an opportunity. And then the last play, you know, like, is it interference or not, the penalty and all that, the team's all into it. I mean, the defense even calls a timeout at the one-yard line. Can we have the right defense on? Because there was nothing scripted. You know, can we give the coordinators an opportunity to kind of run what play they want offensively or defensively? The players like that because it's not how you can kind of cheat with the script if you're a veteran and all that. But this is a touchdown. Haener to Tipton plus 1 yard. Mason Tipton touchdown. You'd have thought we won the damn Super Bowl. I like that passion. There was
The fact Julian Blackman wasn't even in the play, but he, you know, on defense, he's there on the sideline, kicks the pylon after they score.
Because it meant that much because the defense was dominating overall.
For sure.
You know, that wasn't 100%, but it was like definitely 70 to 80% in their favor. But I just wrote this at the end. The offense was very poor overall. In 2 minute, and I say very poor, I want to be a little bit nice. And I say that the words I'm using, choosing those words, the offense was very poor overall in 2 minute, to be kind. So I don't want to say, man, they were freaking terrible. I know the score, you got to go forwards instead of backwards. I didn't want to say that. But I like that off the script at the end. That looks a little pep in the step with the offensive, defense, and the coaches, and that enable the players to do that. But Jake Haener, that one pass, I'm telling you, Steve, I might not even be doing this anymore to watch that. I'll tell you, all the football I've played or witnessed, there's no better throw than that ever. Ever. Wow. I don't care. Dan Marino, John Elway, whoever you think's the best of the best.
Doing that number three proud out there.
No, I know he told me he's going to make number three proud, but I tell you what, that throw to Pettis, the small window was, it wasn't even a window. It was like, how did that ball get in there? And then he caught it. Nobody moved the chains. They got a chance because, you know, we were going backwards, and finally they went forward.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll get more into our one-on-one. Saints safety Jordan Howden joined me and Bobby after practice. Stay tuned after this on WWL Saints Radio.
Welcome back into the Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, hanging out with Saints safety Jordan Howden after today's practice session. Man, how's this early practice been going for you so far at camp?
It's been going well. You know, we got our practice in the morning, you know, with this heat going on, even though it's still blazing at 9 o'clock. But it's a good feeling, you know, everyone's got the juice out there, you know, just going around having fun.
Jordan, how do you feel today, especially, I guess, you know, you want this in a real game, but even in practice to get an interception and how it fires up the defense and, you know, making plays on the ball and coming up with a pick?
You know, it always starts with the process. You know, first of all, it goes with the call and, you know, just everybody on the field doing their job. I feel like that's the biggest thing. And then once everybody's able to do their job, you get to play around a little bit. And I was the post safety and just followed the ball and just, you know, did what I came here to do.
Jordan, you know, when you talk on the back end, like communication, and fans will ask me, I said, well, I'm going to ask Jordan Howden, when here's the world champs Philadelphia Eagles, and when y'all all, like, ran into each other. You know, you and Honey Badger, and who was, I'm trying to think, the other safety? Was it Will Harris, maybe?
Will.
Yeah. Was it just miscommunication then, or what exactly happened? Because, you know, obviously that was a significant play. We were winning by four.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, had a chance to be 3-0.
I definitely wish I could take that playback. It wasn't like miscommunication. It was, I think it was like 3rd and 15 or whatever. And we had like, at the end of the day, like we just run what the call is. And when I was running down to go get the crosser, I just ran into Lat. That's what I did. I ran into Lat when he was guarding somebody, but I didn't really see him until the last minute. And then that's what really happened. Yeah, I know things happen. I learn from it. Now I just got to take a clearer path. I take full responsibility for that play, but new year. So.
New year, yeah. Now, Jordan, when you look at your career and the interest the Saints, you know, had in you and the confidence, the process, how did you end up, like, from San Diego, California to University of Minnesota to be a Gopher?
So born and raised in San Diego, that's first off. And then I – kind of like moved in the IE area around like Marietta, California. Then I finished off my senior year of high school in Las Vegas. And then, you know, I did my senior season then. I still didn't have any offers or anything like that. And then I ended up getting a preferred walk-on at the end of my senior season. So I ended up going to Minnesota then. And then when I went there, I just never looked back. Got my scholarship and then just played. And then now I'm fifth round and I'm with the Saints, so.
So what do you think as far as now your vet and your experience to get on the field more consistently, not just maybe special teams, but now we brought in some even older veteran right. safeties in that competition. Do you take that approach just to bring out the best in me and help me develop? Or?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, we're at the top of the, you know, professional athletes. You know, it's going to be competition everywhere you go. You got to bring your best. That's just what it is. But that's what you want. You know, you bring the best out of you, bring the best out of them, and you get to learn, you know, from the vets. And I also get to teach the young guys as well. So, you know, every day, each year, you know, you got to get better and just come with it every day.
What's been your impression so far of working with new defensive coordinator Brandon Scaley and his team?
Oh, yeah. He, you know, first of all, with the coach, Coach Stanley, he brings the juice every day. You know, he does not change. He's interactive with everybody. You know, we meet together more as a defense. I feel like that's a big thing, especially when you're learning a new system. You know, we all watch film together. You know, what he lets know, he tells, like, the secondary what the D-line is supposed to be doing. So we all, okay, like, if they're doing this, then we have to do this. So we all ties in together, so we all know what we're doing when we get on there. So, you know, it just brings us all together, and then that's what you need, especially on defense, because everybody's job is important. So.
Explain to the fans, you know, like whether it's zone or a man concept, that truly, even though you're playing zone and different coaches have different philosophies of what schemes they're going to utilize, that it comes to a case in point, whether it's experience or the clock in your head, okay, we're playing zone coverage, but now it's almost turns into a matchup man, well, who's in my zone?
Right.
To really, you know, looking at the quarterback or whatever division you get there, to be able to, even though it started out zone,
yeah.
really matching up in the zone area with a particular receiver or player. Yeah.
Only difference between man and zone is just really you don't have to run with somebody all the way across the field. Especially when somebody's in your zone, then that's really your man in your zone. But obviously you're still looking at the quarterback at the same time. But depending on the down and distance or what to 2 minutes, something like that, then you might be a little closer to your man because, you know, things moving quick. So that's probably like the biggest thing when it comes to man is that's the, like, really difference. But sometimes you're going to have to run man. That's just how it is, and you just got to be able to do your job and fight through it. So.
Now, Jordan, growing up, who was maybe a mentor or someone that what you really looked up to and learned from, or maybe wanted to maybe pattern your game after?
Honestly, so starting off when I was like little, I've been playing football since I was 5, 6 years old. I was raised with a bunch of cousins and stuff, so like even if it wasn't football, we was always doing something like sport wise. It could be baseball, basketball. You were not just finna sit around and not do nothing. So I feel like that was a big thing. All my other older cousins, my uncle, they all played football and stuff, and I started playing with older guys, so I started playing with them once we got into like tackle and stuff. I would definitely say, because like my uncle used to play safety, so he used to be a really great safety, but RIP to him. And then, you know, my dad got me into like actually like playing more defensive side, because I used to play both ways and stuff. And, you know, my dad taught me a lot of things. And then I got into like actually like DB coaches when I got to like middle school or high school. And then, yeah, that's how I ended up getting the offer to Minnesota and stuff.
So. Jordan, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it and look forward to seeing more of you, not just at camp when the preseason games finally kick off.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you for having me, sir.
That's it on Sports Talk right now. We'll be back right after this break. Stay tuned on WWL.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, and delve back into Bobby's training camp notebook brought to you by Rouse's Market, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Help us get into those notes. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter, also at practice today. You can check out his article about the Saints day 8 of camp, the highs and lows. Check it all out from the indoor practice facility at WWL.com. Jeff, quite an exciting session of camp today.
A lot of passion, a lot of emotion.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy today. And you know, I think over 3 days of practice out in the sun, it kind of wears down on you a bit. And you could tell, like, they were excited to get indoors and just get some work done without worrying about, like, heat stroke, right? Like, everyone was running around. Everyone had energy. And I think they got some really good work done. And I just think you see, you know, like, you can only make so much out of vibes, right? Like, every year everyone seems upbeat at this time of the season. But I think you can tell sometimes, like, when team morale is good, when guys believe in the system and they believe in what's happening, you know, there's just a different energy. And you've been around these camps a lot longer than me, Bobby. Like, I haven't seen a team that engaged like we saw today in years for the Saints. I think that's a good sign for a first-year coach.
Yeah, like they all into practice. I mean, a Kool-Aid, man. I mean, I want to wake up and drink what he drank before practice. But he was showing
off the field, just going, woo!
Yeah, he was a lot of passion. Maybe it was a special Kool-Aid. I don't know Kool-Aid McKinstry, but boy, I thought that's what you need, though, especially from a defensive standpoint. You know, an offensive lineman, you know, just do your damn job. You know, kind of like, I don't know too many offensive linemen, usually they're kind of quiet, they do their job. But defensively, you got to play with that passion, and I think you always have to have that emotion. But, Jeff, looking at, okay, if you're just observing, because we know who these guys are, but if you're just observing, okay, I'm going to come down and I said this, I think in the past few years, like coming down from Mars. I don't know none of these cats.
Yeah, use that example with Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston.
Yeah, and I don't know, and I don't know who's who. I don't know who's nobody. I'm just watching what I observe. I mean, hands down, you cannot say that overall that Jake Haener doesn't belong. Spencer Rattler and Tyler Shough, they're not head and shoulders above Jake Haener when he's actually done, and when they've had opportunity to have reps and run the offense. I mean, would you agree with that or what?
Yeah, you know, I do think there's some level of he's going against the threes. You're going to look a little better going
right
against the threes. But no, I agree with you. Like, I think there's a reason that Kellen was insistent that Jake is part of this conversation, because Jake is a good quarterback. Like, I think you have three solid young quarterbacks. Are they top-end starting quarterbacks? I'm not sure. But I assure you that all three of these guys can have long NFL careers, whether it's as a starter or a backup. But no, and I mean, like, Jake looks confident out there. And I think that's the difference. When you look at Spencer, you look at Jake, and you look at Tyler, two of those guys are going out there and they look confident. They look like they believe in what they're doing. They trust their reads. They're getting the ball out. And then one kind of looks like he's swimming, right? Like, and I think it's, I almost kind of feel like this competition is a negative for Tyler at this point, because it's turning rookie moments that should be kind of teaching moments into losses. And I just think the way we're looking at it is every day it's a competition and we're analyzing every rookie quarterback rep.
Right.
It's everything. And at the end of the day, that didn't happen to Spencer Rattler last year. He was able to go out there and just learn at the NFL level, second and third team reps. Same thing with Jake the year before. And we're not giving Tyler that grace. And I think that's a negative thing. And I would almost prefer to see, we end this competition early and say, hey, one of these two guys is a starter and you allow Tyler to grow at the NFL level. Because the discourse around Tyler Shuck at this point is a lot more like he's the number 4 overall pick, when in reality he's the number 40 overall pick.
Well, Jeff, that's a great point, and you enlightened me today. And I said, well, Jeff, you got to share this with the Houdet Nation, and because I think it's a better example than what I tried to give, because it does matter what the team has invested in you and where you're drafted. They might say, no, everybody has a clean slate, whether you're a draft pick or you're a free agent. No, that's a bunch of BS. I mean, to a certain extent. Now, if you're a free agent that is dominant, no, maybe a diamond in the rough, you give it an opportunity. But I had said, if you look at the example of the Patriots, and he didn't went thrown to the Wolves right away. No one had expectations for the Patriots last year, so they went with Jacoby Brissett. Then all of a sudden, Drake May's the guy, a week 6 against the Texans. And then Holly finishes the season. Everyone's encouraged about this upcoming season and the Patriots with Drake May. But then I think you said, Bobby, I got a better example than that. Considering what a team has invested in a potential quarterback and a draft pick, that all comes into consideration. So I want you to explain to the Houdet Nation the example you brought up to me, which I think makes total sense. And it's dealing with Super Bowl winning quarterback Jalen Hurts with the Eagles.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about this because I listened to the whole Drake May thing, and I was like, it just doesn't work, because when you draft a guy number 3, you have to play that guy. Whether it's week 1 or whether it's week 10 or whether it's week 8, whatever, you're going to have to play that guy. It's just a matter of time, and you're not going to worry about, oh, well, what if the guy ahead of him is like, Jacoby Brissett was never winning that job. It was always going to be Drake May. It was a matter of when, not if. But the guy that makes more sense is Jalen Hurts, because you go back to 2020 – Jalen Hurts is coming out of college. Very similar situation, right? He starts at Alabama, loses his job to Tua, ends up transferring to Oklahoma, where he kind of rebuilds that draft stock, becomes an NFL prospect. I was at the Peach Bowl. They got completely trucked by LSU that year, but Jalen Hurts was a Heisman finalist. He was fantastic. Ends up falling into the second round. The Eagles take him at number 53, so 13 spots lower than Tyler Shuck, but
right?
Similar situation. The biggest difference is the Eagles at that point had Carson Wentz. Whereas, I feel like Derek Carr going into this season that would have been their Carson Wentz type goal, right? If they had Carr right now, we would be talking about this the same way they were talking about Jalen
Hurts. Carson Wentz and Hurts, right.
Because it wasn't really a competition. That year, Jalen Hurts didn't even go into the season as the backup. Nate Sudfeld was the backup. Jalen Hurts ended up turning into the backup because they wanted to use him as a scrambling quarterback. That's how he got onto the field for the first time. Jalen Hurts didn't get into a game until week 13 that season. Carson Wentz was benched against the Packers. Jalen Hurts gets in. He gets his first start the next week, and Saints fans should remember this because the Saints faced them that week in Jalen Hurts' first start. Miles Sanders and Jalen Hurts go off.
He ran all over us. Nobody had 100 yards rushing.
Allowed a 100-yard rusher in 3 years, and they allowed 2 in one game, Jalen Hurts, Miles Sanders. And we've seen how that's gone, right? And I don't think it's lost on Kellen Moore, who coached Jalen Hurts last year, how that development worked for him, because when he got in week 13, he was ready to go. Saints fans saw him. I'm sorry, week 14. He was ready for that game, and I think that's not lost on the Saints coaching staff. That's not lost on the front office. Guys don't have to start week 1 to be successful in the NFL. And I think that when you're looking at if you want an example of that strategy of starting a guy and letting it play out and going to the second round pick, that's it. That is the best example you can find. And Kellen Moore had a firsthand look at how that guy has turned into a Super Bowl champion quarterback.
Jeff, the short time and the few years now that I've known you, that's like an A+. If I was your professor at Grady, I was like, well
gold star for Jeff today.
No, it's an A+. That is an awesome example how, you know, fans don't want to have patience. Some organizations don't want to have patience, but that's what it truly takes at times. That's why you got to see, you know, I always say the light at the end of the tunnel and the potential. And hopefully that light at the end of the tunnel, I always say, is not that train coming right at you. And then people don't realize, you know, talking about going from the penthouse to the outhouse, this is, was it before COVID? When Carson Wentz was, until he got hurt, was up for MVP in the whole league. And it was a big enough sample size, like 12 games. I want to say that he got hurt, then it was just downhill all from there. So you never know how quickly things could change. But thanks, Jeff, for enlightening me about that, because I like that example way better than Derek May. It's just like, but I don't know if the fans like, oh, why did we draft this guy? Why is he not playing? You know, everybody, okay, slow your roll. You know, the bottom line is you have to see, might be baby steps, even though we don't have the patience to drive through, you know, how we are. I want it now.
Yeah, everything now.
But Jalen Hurts is a perfect example.
Fault, right? Like, part of that is the media's fault, because, like, we're the ones who are out there, and we're hyping right. everything up, you know, because it's like, we're excited about it, right? And I think sometimes, like, we end up not allowing that grace too. So, I don't know. It's a weird situation, but Tyler Shuck is swimming right now. But I still feel good about Tyler Shuck, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I'm going to tell you right now that Spencer Rattler, if I had to play a game today, would be my starter. That doesn't mean I'm quitting on Tyler Shuck. It means he's got to develop.
Amen. That's a good point, Jeff.
Always awesome stuff, Jeff. Besides today's practice report, what else you got going on at WWL.com right now?
Yeah, I had a story up on Kendre Miller. You know, that running back competition is going to be fascinating. We talked to him earlier in camp. You know, he's feeling healthy for the first time in his career, at least from the start of the season. He's not dealing with a knee injury, not dealing with an ankle. You know, he didn't pull his hamstring in the first practice at camp. So, you know, just some insight into his process and how that has gone for him. You can check that out.
Awesome stuff, as always. Talk to you tomorrow on Sports Talk, man.
For sure, guys.
See you. All right, Jeff.
That's Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter, also WWL's digital content producer. Taking a break on Sports Talk as we get ready for the Hall of Fame game. We'll be back with more right after this, though, on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. One last look into Bobby's Notebook, brought to you by Rouse's Market, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Cajun Cannon got a day off from camp on tomorrow, so we won't be back in action until Saturday and
Sunday.
Back-to-back Pratt sessions. They're going to be outside in front of the fans. What more are you looking forward to besides this QB competition?
Well, just most overall competition, still bringing that passion and that excitement, that energy. You know,
right. Can they bring it from outside? Inside
to
outside.
Right. Yeah, dealing with the heat. I can tell you what, I think the defense, not necessarily I want them to totally dominate the offense, but I guarantee you, they'll bring that passion from the inside to the outside if they dominate like that, or as dominant as they were overall. I think they will be passionate. But hopefully the offense bounces back a little bit. And what we're going to do is, Steve, because, you know, people driving to work or driving home from work, I should say, whatever. Saturday and Sunday, we're going to observe practice, and then we're going to break it down on Monday and do
a lot to unload after that.
Yeah, on Sports Talk. So we have a lot of notes and to see, because I can tell you, things can change quickly after one or two practices.
Well, that's a wrap on today's edition of Sports Talk. Coming up next, the Hall of Fame game. Tune in on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Cajun Cannon, say goodnight to the crowd.
All right, bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who that ghost, Saints?
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.